My guest on Dan Really Likes Wine, the podcast this week, is someone I've known for, it must be closing in on a decade now since we first sat in glorious sunshine in the Yonkershoek Valley and sat down for what should have been about a 5-10 minute interview and ended up being two bottles of wine and much happy recollection on a career that's gone via the Cape Winemakers Guild protege space to one of the most exciting young winemakers in the country. And now somebody who's got the daft idea that setting up a wine bar in Salt River would also be a good idea at Given Vague. Lovely to catch up. Lovely to see you.
Yeah, lovely to see you. Thanks for having me here.
Is it about 10 years now? It must be thereabouts.
Well, I'm probably 15 years old, but yeah, let's go with it.
I remember sitting in that sunshine, having that conversation with you. We did already at that point quite a bit of reflection as you went back to growing up and making that decision that wine was a space that you wanted to have a look at. Take us back to that and to how somebody who's very clearly built really to be coming off the back of a scrum and causing havoc with opposition defences, instead decided that wine was the way forward.
Yeah, it's probably not the marketing story that you tell sommeliers and wine buyers across the world, but you know, I'm the youngest of three brothers, and my parents were both teachers, of which my mother didn't drink up until today, still doesn't drink a drop of wine.
Is your wine that bad that she will yeah. not have any of it?
Well, I've tried to convince her. At least she took a few sips of the new stuff coming up. My middle brother was actually the first to go and study winemaking. You know, middle child syndrome, where they think they're the mavericks and they want to do everything different or be upstream towards the system. And during my school rugby days, you know, coming from George, Otaniqua, we used to play the big schools here in the Cape Winelands. And at that time, my brother used to work for a cooperative in Paarl, where we used to stay. And he used to take me through the barrels and stainless steel tanks. And I thought, you know, that was amazing. Having wine or milky wine from a barrel, asking him how it changes to this product that we have in front of us, that was quite a cool detail. And as a young adolescent at 16, 17 years old, I thought that was the perfect way to piss off my mother to say, I'm going to go and study winemaking. Hopefully this is a child-friendly or not a child-friendly podcast. Sorry for the words there. So I was already convinced at 17 years old that I'm going to the University of Stellenbosch. That's my first thing, you know, as a student. We've all heard of the great parties that Stellenbosch University has or had. I went to study at university, completed my degree in the short period of 4 years. And after that, I got the opportunity to join the Cape Winemakers Guild. As we went on, the passion grew, my curiosity for grapes and wine grew more, actually more wine because of the parties. And, you know, I had the opportunity to go to France and that's where, you know, the big moment came where I fell in love with wine, with the culture that they have in France and how they view wine and bread and cheese. When I got back, I started at Stock Connet.
The two fascinating elements to that story, which kind of feed into each other, but also contradict each other. You're not alone in being a winemaker or a sommelier or person in the wine industry who comes from a non-drinking family or a family of non-drinking elements. And Chiara is a good example. I look at somebody like Kat up at Proud Mary in Johannesburg, not a wine drinking family at all. A lot of people who just, there's no wine. And yet you fall into this space. And then you go to France, where I think wine is seen very differently yeah. by a lot of people. There's not the connotation that there might be to the alcohol industry in South Africa, because in France, you just have a glass of wine or two with lunch. You have a glass of wine or two with dinner. It's very much embedded in the day-to-day culture. And I can see how you would have gravitated towards that, because it is such a welcoming and involved and just fun way to live life.
Yeah. Look, I think, coming from the different cultures, like you explained, me, Chiara, Kat up in Joburg, I think our communities, we were rather, not that we weren't drinking, our families, we were probably having more beers and alcohol and spirits. In my family, there was always time for a nice party that I always envisioned and saw. And it was just, incorporating wine as a product into that, having a good time, drinking wine responsibly and actually teaching younger folks and, you know, even your parents and mentors on what a great product wine is and can be. And there's a lot of history and culture in a product or in a glass.
You got to spend some time in France. There's still that little whisper of a French accent that comes through after a few glasses of wine. Back to South Africa. And you move into a space which, certainly in the time I've been in the wine industry, I've seen change, not always at the most accelerated of paces, but there is visible change, and it was change that was much needed. When you came into the space, having a young winemaker of colour in South Africa was still very much an anachronism. You weren't the usual face of winemaking in South Africa. How aware of that were you? How much did it sit quietly in the back of your mind thinking, I'm more than just Rutger the winemaker, I'm Rutger who represents what can be going forward?
Yeah, it was, I'm going to be honest, it was definitely challenging. I think the industry was also very much based on certain beliefs and structures, Stellenbosch all across in the wine country. But I also knew what the challenges were, you know, sitting in a class of 40 students in Stellenbosch University where, you know, 50% of the students will go back to the farm and work for their parents. I knew that I needed to work harder, study harder, accept wine because it's going to be my bread or income, you know. And, you know, I come from a Model C school, so it's not that I'm not used to being around, Caucasian people. It's not that I'm coming from Mars. So, you know, I wanted to really work hard, establish myself. And I had dreams also in university. I wanted to be a winemaker in one of the big estates in Stellenbosch. And although sometimes I actually thought that would never happen, it will only be a dream. I would probably end up somewhere, you know, in the Northern Cape or in Bloemfontein making...
One of those famous wine region areas.
And, you know, I was very lucky, and I will always be grateful for the Conde family, for what they did at Stock Conde, taking a chance, believing in me. I don't know if I charmed him. I never told the story. Actually, the week before we flew out to France, we had actually a bon voyage party on the Friday, and I went for an interview with him on that Friday. But the party already started 9 o'clock in the morning, and my interview was at 5. So one can say, you know, I had a few glasses of wine before my interview. So I don't know if that
it
was
clearly helped.
Yeah, if that was confidence. But eventually, I got the job. I've never looked back. I think we shared great passion of producing world-class wines. We wanted to be some of the top producers in South Africa, and I still want to be one of the top producers in South Africa. But also, you know, looking after your families and talking about different cultures and how we incorporate that. Jose has always been a mentor for me. With the challenges that I've had in the industry, you know, being one of few. It's so far it's been a very nice ride.
If you are just listening to this, as most people do, and you can't actually see the man in front of me, imagine if Dwayne Johnson and Jonah Lomu had a kid. This is our winemaker, Rutger van Wyk. So I think Jose was just terrified of saying no, so he had to give you the job. And it worked out spectacularly, and we can see that now looking back, because you made all this incredible wine, in particular some of the Cabernet Sauvignon that came out, the three pines, I think of 15 and I think of 17, and just devastatingly, absurdly good wine that you were able to deliver us to. It all looks so natural now. Yeah, clearly, this is what you were made to do. But when you started out, you'd been given this job. You were newish in the industry. You didn't have much experience. Yeah. How nerve-wracking was that?
You know, even starting this new venture with what I'm doing now, my motto is always take it day by day and, you know, challenge by challenge. And just enjoy the ride. You know, it's a cliche, but YOLO is probably what people say. You only live once, and you really have to grasp opportunity, because opportunity will come knocking. You have to put in the work, and when opportunity comes, you have to really run with it. And that's sort of like my motto with life, and hopefully I can teach that to my little boys also when they grow up.
A couple of other opportunities have since come your way. Let's look at the first of those. There's a wonderful ability with wine to time travel, where you can go back to a vintage, to a bottle. There's also the ability to time travel if you go to Wellington, because you go straight back to 1953, which is where Wellington sits at the moment. It's an incredibly relaxed, quiet, almost naive part of the world. There's an innocence to life in Wellington and a pace that's welcomely slow. And that is what you decided on after this almost decade at Stark Conde, moving over to Dullhof. You've been there as we speak for coming up for a year or thereabouts. You've had to settle into a very different world, but you've also had to take on a different challenge because you're working with new grapes, a couple of new varietals, new people. How easy, how fun, how exciting has this last year or so been?
It's been a roller coaster in a good way. Like you said, working with new people, new environment, new grapes. But I knew I wanted to do that challenge. I think after 9 or 10 years, you know, last year in my mind, I knew I sort of have accomplished personally everything that I wanted to accomplish at Stark Conde. And I actually also am starting my own wine brand pretty soon, which will launch next year. So watch the space. So yes, it's all about taking on new challenges, and the support base that you know, people in Wellington has offered me, how friendly they are. Like you said, how quiet it is and how calm they are. It's been awesome this year to just, you know, just start with a new challenge, but it's not been that fast-paced as what a person should think working in Stellenbosch or Cape Town, you know.
Oh, so far, so good. And the smile is broad, not just though because of that, also because of the other new opportunity. But before we talk about your new wine bar, one of the things I asked you to do was to bring along a bottle of wine of your choice that spoke to the story of Rutger somehow. And I was pretty sure that it was either going to be a 2015 or 2017 Three Pines glorious unicorn wine you can't get anymore that costs thousands and thousands of rand, or because you were in France, you might be bringing me an old bottle of First Growth. Instead, you arrived with a slightly warm screw cap bottle of Sauvignon Blanc from the bottom shelf of the soup. Not from the bottom shelf at all. But this, I'm fascinated. I'm delighted with what you've bought because it is a very personal selection. We have a glass of KWV Sauvignon Blanc. That might surprise people who are listening or watching, but there's a very good reason for it. Cheers, first of all, and thank you. This is great at 8:10 in the morning at the Cape Grace. Why this particular bottle, Rutger?
Yeah, well, firstly, I wouldn't have the budget to bring you a gift of a First Growth from France, you know, wine making.
Not yet. Not yet.
Yeah. And yes, when thinking about bringing a bottle of wine, you know, a lot of thought has gone through what would I bring. But this is an awesome story. You know, we're drinking a KWV Sauvignon Blanc. So this was actually my first wine experience that I've ever had. I will not reveal the age that I was when drinking my first
11 years old. Excuse me, sorry.
But being at a friend's house and his father or parents went out for dinner, and we were having or playing, you know, as 18-year-olds, we were playing PlayStation, and we had the idea of going in for an adventure and scratching around in the father's bar. We thought we'll open a bottle of KWV Sauvignon Blanc. And let me tell you, you know, as a 20-year-old drinking Sauvignon Blanc, you know, having that first experience of wine, that was quite an horrific, acidic experience for a youngster like me. So that's the reason why I brought this KWV. And it actually brought me back to, you know, my first experience of wine and the journey that has been and will still come. So yeah, it's that's why wine is so awesome. It can take you back to different times and memories and definitely history.
It's clearly triggered some great memories. It's also, I was speaking to Mike Radcliffe in Stellenbosch recently, and he was talking about one of his real hopes for South Africa is that our heritage brands regain some of the status that they deserve. And I think he was mostly looking at brands like Niederberg and like Zonneblum, but we sometimes forget, because KWV is such a big brand, that doesn't mean that the wine they make falls away at all. And at the very top level, Ilse, and the wine that's been made at the Mentors is absolutely phenomenal. But just across the board, KWV delivers some outstanding wine.
No, it's amazing. And yes, like Matt Rackoff mentioned, you know, it's very important You know, you have a wave of the young guns coming through the wine industry, and you have Duncan Savage and the Molyneux and Artie Pardonos, you know, which is sort of like the rock stars of the industry. But then you also have KWV, the Heineken group, that, you know, create jobs, which is important for our industry and our GDP. And, you know, sourcing grapes for my own personal projects, very good vineyards, you always have Izal walking through there to also being part of the whole grape purchasing processes. So they are buying some awesome grapes too, and you can see that in some of the wines.
You mentioned Duncan Savage, the mayor of Salt River. I've walked through. He's a wonderful wine. He's a slightly unkempt sort. I have seen people trying to give him small change or leftover food when he's walking towards his winery. He's somebody who took Salt River, which has got absolutely zero wine credibility anywhere, and now turned it into this home of great South African wine. And you're now building on this, because this is the other great opportunity that's come your way. It is not just a Rutger van Wyk winemaker extraordinaire. It is now a Rutger van Wyk wine bar owner, which has got a slim chance of making you a vast amount of money and a very good chance of losing you vast amounts of money and reducing your life expectancy considerably.
Yeah, I think, I think my discipline has to be, we have to be very hard on my discipline, because I don't want to get high on my own supply. So, yes, we have this new wine bar in Salt River. And, you know, I think Salt River sort of reminds me of old school Brooklyn, New York, and where Brooklyn is now. If you think about that, I think there's a great potential for Salt River to go through that same strides. And like I said, there's a lot of great arts and culture and people living in the area or driving through the area. And yeah, you never know. We might have a Salt River 5-kilometer marathon soon from Savage Wines to the wine bar.
Count me in for that. It's a bit longer than my normal distances, but I might be persuaded. It's really exciting to see this. You mentioned Brooklyn. I think meatpacking in New York, if we take Manhattan as or greater New York as our point of departure, but that sense of urban renewal and revival, but in a very authentic way. And I'm really excited about this. The wine bar is called Novel.
Novel Wine Bar. Like the name says, it's all about stories. It's all about telling stories about younger winemakers having their own brands that sometimes you can't find because they make such small volumes. You know, you have a Dan Nickel that just comes in, buys up everything if he likes it.
Happens regularly. That's why my kids aren't going to university.
So, yes, that's in Salt River. And we sort of want to provide that one-stop shop where if your wife is shopping at the biscuit mill or having some coffee or tea with her girlfriends, the husband or the guy can come and have a glass of wine on a Saturday morning or afternoon and just have a good time, you know.
Yeah, you see, in my case, it's my wife and her mates at the wine bar talking about rugby while I've been sent off to do the shopping. But either way, it's going to be a really cool space. I'm looking forward to coming down to see it, to come in and hanging out and seeing this little urban wine route grow with yourself and Duncan and Duncan's boss, Manele, and more to come. And I love the fact that Novel allows me to reference the fact that this is a story with many chapters, and only a few of them for you have been written, and there are so many more. I can't wait to read those, to maybe play a little bit of part of them, and have more wine, be it KWV Sauvignon Blanc that you first had when you were 7 years old, or some of this new brand of yours coming out, and the wine in between. But thank you for the wine, for the friendship, and for giving us so much to be proud about.
Cheers.
And South African right. Wine. Rutger van Wyk, currently of Dulof, formerly of Stark Conde, and always very proudly South African.